everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Castler podcast. You can call me Sky Dog. I'm just kidding. I was watching a Dwayne Allman doc the other night, so I had to bust out a little slide. Hope everybody's doing well. I know you missed me. Sorry the podcast didn't come out, I guess, last week or yesterday, but I'm back here with you. We can break it all down. Just took a little break. That's my prerogative. It's free. There's no commercials and no subscription, which means I have to only work when I'm inspired. And I think I've been pretty consistent, but I appreciate your patience and I missed you guys because I do love you and I do love all the comments. And I hope everybody had a nice end of summer. I hope everybody is dealing with everything we're dealing with in the world, you know, in an okay fashion. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack. So let's get into it. We don't have to cover it all. I won't waste your time with my thoughts on the Queen. I'll let people mourn. I know some people in that world, and you know, I know people are hurting over that, and I also know the history of colonialism. And I don't think my podcast is the place to break that all down. But I'll try to remember to tell you a funny story about a member of the royal family at the end of the show. But let's get into the Trump stuff, right? Let's talk about, you know, I think the last time we spoke and I recorded this, we were still discussing the FBI subpoena and the search warrant and the documents that were discovered. In the meantime, we got that photograph that there was actual top secret classified nuclear documents, you know, among the, you know, largesse that he took. You know, Trump's a hoarder. He always, if you've seen a picture of his desk, he would hoard Sudafed in his drawer, as I pointed out, and there would be old, you know, People magazines from the 80s still sitting there. This is in the 2000s. You know, the guy was, you know, he's a pack rat. So the fact that he was pack ratting around the country with all these documents is staggering. Right? It's staggering to me that that man is still walking free. Kalief Browder was accused of stealing a backpack. He was a 15-year-old little boy, and he got thrown in Rikers Island for 2 years, and he didn't survive the trauma, right? Donald Trump's been breaking the law his whole life. You know, his first lawsuit, you know, a first sort of case investigation that the DOJ launched against him was against him and his father in 1973. For racial discrimination. His father was a grifter, okay? His dad made Trump a millionaire by the time he was 11 years old because his father would put properties in his children's names to get out of paying taxes. You know, that's what we learned in the excellent reporting that came out in the New York Times. Suzanne Craig and Russ Buettner, with the help of Mary Trump, broke that story. So, you know, it's a family of grifters who have been breaking the law their entire career. His grandfather was famously a brothel owner in the Pacific Northwest. Trump's dad was laundering money for the Gambino crime family. You know, Trump himself became a Genovese guy. I'm actually mixing the two up. The Gambinos were the New York guys. You know, they're all New York guys, the five families, but Manhattan was the territory of, you know, Fat Tony Salerno and Paul Castellano and these Gambino guys. Trump's father had always built for the Genoveses. And when Trump told his dad he was going to build a tower in Manhattan, his dad was like, that's not our territory, right? We don't have protections there. But Trump was the young Turk who struck out on his own. And, you know, greed. Greed is a hell of a drug. And that family has been running on greed and fumes and corruption for many, many years. So the fact that it all culminated in him becoming president of the United States by reaching out to the Russians, right? By getting help from the Russians, by Jared Kushner micro-targeting people on Facebook, you know, who had voted for Obama but had an NRA sticker on their car and a Kid Rock CD. And, you know, they found the exact demographic they needed to switch to his case, and they targeted them, and it worked. And he stole the 2016 election. I'm not somebody who believes that the polls were that far off. I think they cheated then. They cheated in 2020. When cheating didn't work, they attacked the Capitol. And I think people are forgetting how many sort of stopgaps and fail safes they had to try and ensure Trump would stay in power, right? I reminded people on Twitter today, I'm recording this on Tuesday afternoon, I reminded people today that Eric Prince in Wyoming on his ranch was running a covert operation where he was training people with the help of an MI6, ex-MI6 agent, right, that was now working for Eric Prince. They were training operatives to infiltrate the Democratic Party in state elections and Republicans that weren't, you know, adequately like on Trump's side. You know, Republicans that they were worried about not playing ball with the corruption were the target of subterfuge and espionage that was being financed and executed by Eric Prince and whoever's paying for that insane cabal. So my point in that is there were so many ways that they were trying to steal the 2020 election. It's honestly a miracle that he's not president today. It really is, like, that it didn't work because there was so much criminality involved and there were so many venal, easily corruptible men in the GOP that were willing to look the other way. It really is a miracle that we survived that. And the fact that he's still walking free is proof of that. Right? Who else would have gotten away with that? It's staggering that he's still walking around his golf courses as he was doing yesterday, having, you know, a talk walk, as they called it in the mob days. A buddy of mine called me up who works for a network, and he used to cover John Gotti and Sammy the Bull and all this stuff. And he said that's what they would do at the Ravenite at the social club. You know, on Mulberry Street, they would go outside and walk around because they knew there was parabolic mics and there was bugs in the club. So they'd go outside when you talk about things you don't want somebody to hear. And that's clearly what Trump was doing, you know, on the golf course. Even if those guys were people that were going to buy the golf course, there's sensitive information there. And Trump knew where to go when he didn't want to be heard. And the scary thing about that is he was going there all the time when he was president, right? He was going there. They got pictures of him making cell phone calls from his golf cart. So I think that's his safe place, that he really knows he can get away with stuff. I don't think he trusts anybody around him at this point in Jersey. You know, if you're mixed up in some hinky stuff, Jersey's a tough place to be, and Trump knows it. You know, Mar-a-Lago, he's probably like, when he goes back there, he's going to be completely freaked out and paranoid because we know there was a mole down there that sort of ratted him out to how many documents he still had when they had lied to investigators in the first place. That was the cause of the raid, is because NARA found out they didn't get everything back. So, you know, my point is the walls are closing in on him and he's going sort of full mob mode. You know, he's always been a mobster. This is the point I'm making, right? But he's going into that, like, sort of like, you know, who do I trust now? You know, what do I do to get out of this situation? And Trump's a guy who was in 4,000 lawsuits before he became president, you know, nearly 4,000 lawsuits before he became president. And if you guys have been listening to this podcast, you've heard me talk about a bunch of those. So he's betting he can survive, right? He's betting he can corrupt the system enough to get away with it this time. And why shouldn't he? Because he's corrupted it so many times in the past. You guys know the story I've told you about his helicopter pilot he was in business with. It was flying pounds of cocaine up to Ohio. And then somehow, miraculously, that guy got busted, but his case got moved to North Jersey into the federal district of Trump's sister, Marianne Barry Trump, right? Who got him off, right? Whose husband was a lawyer for Trump's casino. So they've kept that criminality in the family so long, they've been able to get their tentacles out into the Justice Department enough to get him off on a technicality all the time, right? That's what we saw in that judge, a woefully unqualified judge in South Florida who had never tried a case, became a lifetime federal, you know, circuit judge, right? I don't know if it was district or circuit, whatever. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but you know who I'm talking about, right? The one who allowed him to have a special master. And every other legal expert has been like, that's insane. You know, how are they doing this? What is she basing it on? She's basing it on nothing other than fealty to Trump. And that's what he did to the GOP. That's what the GOP is now, right? It's just an arm of Trump's criminal operation. And you're going to do whatever the boss asked you to do to continue to be an earner, right? And that's what Lindsey Graham is doing with his nationwide abortion ban that he announced this morning, you know, which is the cause for me recording this podcast, because I know if some of you guys want to listen, I don't want to keep you hanging, you know, and that's traumatic. You know, it's traumatic. It's an assault on women and women's rights. And we're in 2022 and we're having to deal with something that we assumed was settled case law, right? But Trump was allowed to make appointments on the Supreme Court. And it wasn't just Trump. Alito had been on there during George W. Bush, right? George W. Bush put Alito on the court in 2005. And back then, since we're in a 9/11 commemorative week, everybody was like letting Bush do whatever he wanted. The Democrats weren't giving him any like pushback on any of his judicial choices. You know, that's when Chris Christie became a federal prosecutor, you know, a guy who normally would have been a little too corrupt for that gig. And it was post 9/11. And in the spirit of togetherness, Democrats just sort of, you know, allowed him to have his choices because they thought he was going to be this, you know, guy fighting terrorism and stuff. And instead he was putting whack jobs like Alito on the court, you know, and the New Yorker did a great piece on Alito recently. Like, you know, Alito was a guy from Trenton who ended up going to Princeton and then Yale Law School and like never like fit in with the 60s, right? He was opposed to like women's rights and feminism and hippie, you know, anti-war protests and all these things sort of offended him, you know, on a cellular level. And then he became an advocate to repeal those things. And that's who they find. That's who the Federalist Society, of which Alito, you know, is a champion, you know, and speaker. That's who they wanted to put in power, right? Ever since Carter was president and they realized environmentalism and equality, you know, and battling racism were going to be things that people on the left were going to be serious about and were going to implement, the right had to answer that. And they answered it through this law and order sort of manipulation, war on the poor that Reagan, you know, came into office on, and people ate it up in the suburbs. You know, they loved that. And then things happened like 9/11 that made people sort of react reflexively and not look deep at who the people were that were getting put on federal benches. And that's why I'm talking about Alito, because he was a guy whose life's goal was to repeal abortion. And he's the guy who obviously wrote the memo that was leaked, that effectively the Dobbs case, which effectively took it away, you know, in many states and perhaps on a nationwide level, coming this fall or coming if they take back the House, you know, and that should scare people. You know, it should scare people that there's somebody like Lindsey Graham out there, you know, a 65-year-old man who's never been in a relationship with a woman in his life. You know, why is he telling people, women, what's good for them? You know, so it's terrifying. And I'm not saying this to scare you. I'm just saying it's scary how deep the corruption goes, is the point I'm trying to make. And it's why Trump is still walking free. Right? You don't go to prison when you know the guys that build the prisons, right? That's kind of the rule. The establishment, a rich white guy, he's not going to get caught up in stuff that somebody who, not even white, you know, a poor white guy, if Trump had grown up poor in the Bronx, he would have been dead or in jail by the time he was 20 years old, just based on his aberrant personality alone, right? But he went on to grift for decades, to sexually assault women, you know, to cheat on all his wives, to cheat on his business partners, to hold everybody to NDAs, to attack beauty pageant contestants and still get a network show after that, you know, to have Jeff Zucker in charge at NBC, you know, when Trump was clearly on drugs and clearly a lunatic, and we'd all pretend that he was a billionaire because Mark Burnett had a hit show on his hands. You know, I didn't pretend. I was a freelancer and I talked about it as soon as he ran for president, but a lot of people went along with it because there was money to be made, right? And that's the American way, you know, a buck for the class that rules, you know, and classicism and sort of the ruling, you know, elite are shaping this country in ways that we may not recover from if we don't get real serious about it. You know, it's like climate. It's on us right now. You know, it's on us. We're experiencing the hottest temperatures on records across the globe. You know, last time I spoke, a third of Pakistan was underwater. I think it went up to half of the country. Millions and millions of people are displaced. You know, we're in an emergency mode and you're not even hearing about it. You're hearing about a funeral in England that's lasting for 2 weeks, you know? So I'm just saying that to the point that, like, we don't really want to face the harsh truths. And we don't really want to face how corrupt our judicial system may already be, you know? And I think Trump will end up getting indicted. You know, it looks like there's at least three separate DOJ investigations, you know? And since the last time I recorded this, we learned that the Save America PAC, you know, is another one of those things on the list, right? His grift post-election in 2020, because he knew he lost that morning, right? Trump knew that very morning he had lost the election. I know because I was listening to him when he went to a campaign headquarters in Northern Virginia, and he gave a little speech for the cameras trying to rally the troops. And I could hear in his voice that the narcissist in him knew he had lost. I could hear the defeat in his voice because they have internal polling, right? So they knew he didn't have a chance. And he was a broken man that whole day. That's why they didn't even get him out to give a speech at the White House till like almost 2 a.m. And then he walked out there, obviously high out of his brain, you know, when a drunk Rudy Giuliani had told him, hey, we're just going to fight it. We're going to fight it, you know, and even our closest aides were trying to keep Giuliani away from him, you know, that he wouldn't fall under that spell. But I think when they laid out to Trump that he could grift off it, that he could now send out fundraising texts and emails and ask for more money, a light went on, right? And he collected $250 million by lying and saying the election was stolen. And he knew it wasn't stolen. And a lot of people went along with it. And 40 of those people just got subpoenaed by the DOJ the other day. And many of them had their cell phones seized. And that's big time trouble for Trump. And he knows it. And it's more than likely had something to do with that visit to the golf course, right? So, you know, he's in trouble. There's no way around that. The real question is, how did it get to this point? You know, how did we allow this to happen? You know, why are we letting it continue to happen? Why are not all these men under arrest? Why is Lindsey Graham out here attacking abortion rights, talking about a nationwide ban, when he's defied two subpoenas, January 6th and Georgia, where he called up the Secretary of State and tried to get him to throw the election for Trump, because Trump owns him, right? Everybody knows Lindsey Graham was anti-Trump until he played one round of golf with Trump, and Trump pulled out some compromise, you know, because Lindsey was known to visit, you know, homosexual prostitutes, gay men, right? I know homosexual might be a bad word. I don't mean it in that way, but Trump, you know, Lindsey Graham was known to frequent, you know, like paid, you know, sexual workers of his same gender. And that's something that the right looks down on because they pretend that they're all these weird Christian Bible loving freaks, as if anything is wrong with being gay. Nothing's wrong with it. It's as normal as the sun coming up in the morning, right? But the people who hide under this veil of conservatism want to hide that, right? So Lindsey would be at the top of that list, and Trump would know it. Trump knows that stuff on everybody. He knows it on Jared. He knows it on Charles Kushner, who would visit prostitutes in New York City, you know, but also happened to be an Orthodox Jewish man, you know, with a family, and that wouldn't look good if that got out. Chris Christie got a hold of that information because Trump knew it. Trump gave it to Christie, and that's why Christie got Charles Kushner to take a plea deal when he was on trial for hiring a prostitute to ensnare his brother-in-law out of greed, right? Greed and compromise. Billionaires don't generally take plea deals. Charles Kushner did, you know, because he's got the same sort of tastes as his son. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's a secret. Jared and Ivanka, arranged marriage. They both prefer different people than each other. Okay. But it's a scam. It's a business. And when people have your secrets, they own you. And that's been Trump's MO from the beginning, you know, and that's what all of this stuff is about, right? We're being held hostage as a nation by somebody else's criminality and the tentacles of that criminality reaching into people's bedrooms, into their personal lives, right? It's gross. This is a low point in American history. You know, I don't think there's any other way to state it than that. You know, the fact when that picture came out and showed those documents lying on the floor, it was insane. It's insane to me that this guy is still walking free. You know, my grandfathers were both intelligence agents. You know, my grandfather never spoke once of anything he did in his entire career to my grandmother, who passed away earlier this year. You know, and they ended up divorcing after 25 years of marriage because she was tired of being married to somebody she didn't even know who he was, because he took his oath seriously. Right. And what happened when Trump got elected? He got Jared and Ivanka to get classified, you know, clearance, to get top secret clearance for which they weren't eligible. Right. Kushner wasn't eligible because he owed too much money, because he made the dumbest real estate decision that anybody made in New York City leading up to the crash in 2008. He bought 666 Fifth Avenue, overpaid, and then the bill was coming due and a thing went underwater and he was screwed. Right. But then he got into office with the help of the Russians. And it was Kushner himself who set up the back channel, trying to get in touch with the Kremlin while Trump was president-elect, before they'd even taken office and been sworn in. Kushner was figuring out how to talk to the Russians without our intelligence agencies hearing. You know, and people forget, Trump had 5 meetings with Putin when he was president, and they were all off the record. They were all spur of the moment. They'd be at a dinner party in South America, and all of a sudden Putin would show up at the table with Trump and Melania, no interpreter. You know, nobody there from the State Department to pay attention, to write down what was going on. And we famously know the Helsinki meeting where Trump stole the interpreter's notes and then walked out there like Reek on Game of Thrones on the world stage and denounced our intelligence agencies on behalf of Putin, said, "I believe Putin." You know, that was the first beginning of the debasement of American history and our standing in the world. That was, you know, that was something that, you know, it'll be a long time before we recover from that, you know, because it was disgusting. And it was who Trump was. And it was no accident that he went after the CIA the day after his inauguration, right? His first trip was out to Langley in front of the Wall of Heroes. And he started talking about his crowd size at his inauguration that nobody came to, right? And his inauguration, he raised $107 million, and we still don't know where it went, okay? I worked on 2 inaugurations for Barack Obama. They didn't cost nearly that much money, and we had actual superstars, okay? We had Beyonce and Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi and, you know, everybody in the world who we asked. Trump had 3 doors down and the marching band from Wheaton High School. You know what I mean? And somehow collected $107 million that he funneled through Tom Barrack that we still haven't investigated. And he settled with DC, who brought a case against him for $750 million quietly earlier this year, right? So that's how it goes, because he's been gaming the system forever. He knows he can push back. You know, I was speaking about the crash. Trump had taken out massive, you know, loans from Deutsche Bank, which was known as an international money laundering operation for Russians, right? If you were a Russian oligarch, your money went through Deutsche Bank. They've been in trouble for that. They've paid billions in fines. They did it. They continue to do it. A lot of their executives who are involved in that show up dead mysteriously. Don't think anything's related. No, I'm joking. Obviously it is, right? But so Trump had this like $700 million of debt that was coming due on this tower he built in Chicago in 2008. And he missed his payment, missed the next payment. I think I mentioned this recently, right? And the bank was like, "Where's our money?" Deutsche Bank. And he threatened to sue them. He turned around and sued them for $3 billion and accused him of predatory lending. And they took about $200 million or $300 million off the bill, right? That's what you can do when you're wealthy and you can make the law work for you. When you can hire, you know, at that time, he could still get white shoe law firms to take his cases. Now he's getting, you know, OAN talking heads and jokes, you know, jokes of attorneys, you know, laughable people. But it really doesn't matter because he's already appointed over 200 judges, federal judges. You know, we saw in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, you know, earlier this year, we saw that judge was clearly gonna, you know, let Kyle off and give Kyle's defense every break in that case. That's MAGA. That's the branding that Trump did. And that's the ultimate point I'm trying to make here, is that Trump took his life of crime and his venality and the corruption and the mob ties and his inside knowledge of how it all works, and he branded it. You know, he married it with overt racism and iconography of screaming eagles and MAGA flags and all this stupidity that so many Americans just ate up because they'd been depleted, you know, and the ground had been sort of like set for them, had been laid, you know, by Rupert Murdoch, right? And 20 years of Fox News poisoning their brains, feeding them lies and resentments. So you wave the flag, you jingle a thing, and then you get this big oaf showing up telling them the Mexicans are their problem, and they eat it up, you know, and they did. And now it's a systematic thing. You know, it's worked its way through this country in all these states, right? Every day you see another ad for some GOP person who's running in the midterms, who's saying stuff that at any other point in my life, you'd get laughed out of there, right? Herschel Walker is literally tied with Raphael Warnock. That's insane. Senator Warnock. I worked with Herschel. He was on Celebrity Apprentice. Most people forget that. He's dumb as a box of rocks. He's got, you know, he's gotten hit in the head 1,000 times on a football field. He's not somebody you need to put in the Senate. And he's kind of twisted too, if you can judge anything by what he's saying, you know, and that's the most cynical thing, is that they're putting him up there because he's black, you know, just like Clarence Thomas, you know, wasn't qualified at all. You know, Clarence Thomas went to Yale and stuff. He's not a dumb guy, but like Clarence Thomas wasn't the best choice, but he was black. And they knew, you know, George H.W. Bush knew conservatives and Democrats couldn't really push against him. You know, he was the perfect kind of guy for that moment. And even though it was shown that he was a sexual predator, and anybody with a brain believed Anita Hill, he got confirmed, right? And then H.W. Bush's son becomes president and puts Alito on there. And this is establishment. You know, H.W.'s dad was a senator from Connecticut, right? It's a ruling class. It's a monarchy, right? But without kings and titles, but it's the same sort of thing. It's based on taking something from others and ruling over them and making sure all the wealth moves up like a Ponzi scheme, like a pyramid scheme, right? And that the ruling class can still control the legislature and the judicial branch of this country and the presidency. And the only difference between Trump and these other guys is that in the past, there was a level of decorum, you know, like they all did some shady stuff. H.W. Bush was, you know, was working with Noriega and the CIA to sell drugs in the 80s, you know, under Reagan's either knowledge or not knowledge, depending on, you know, if you believe him or not. I think he probably didn't even have a clue what was going on. I don't think he'd have a problem with it if he knew. I think he was just eating jelly beans and, you know, having some pudding and going to bed. And, you know, behind the scenes, Al Haig and all these guys were doing whatever they wanted, you know. But so you had Ollie North and that whole cabal, right? And then HW gets to take over for Reagan, right? You have all the stuff he did. You had his first Iraq war. Then you had 9/11 happen when his son, you know, becomes president. And we prosecute two wars that have nothing to do with 9/11, which was financed by members of the Saudi Arabian family. We flew those guys out of the country, the next day, right? On Rocket Cargo, by the way, which is a freight company. If you're in a band and you're moving your gear to Europe, you use a company called Rocket Cargo. And the brother of that company is friends with a rock star I used to work with. I won't mention his name, but he knew him. And that guy was the flight that flew like the remaining members of the Bin Ladens out of the country. The one plane that was allowed to leave when the air was shut down for 2 days. You weren't allowed to fly. And Trump himself makes his phone call, his famous phone call, saying he saw bodies flying out of the towers, which you can't from Midtown, right? You can't see that from 56th and Fifth Avenue, okay? You don't see any of it. You can, you know, but he lied. And he said he saw people like, you know, dancing on roofs in Jersey City and celebrating, which was a lie. It was just designed to gin up, you know, anti-Muslim rhetoric, you know, and Muslims are as American as anybody else, right? And to my knowledge, he wasn't even in New York City that day. He was in Mar-a-Lago vacationing with another couple. And a guy told this whole story. He said, me and my wife were friends with Trump. We went down there. We were down there when 9/11 happened. He's lying. That guy actually died mysteriously, but you can, I don't know if his death was mysterious. It might've been a coincidence, but that guy's dead. He can't corroborate the story, but you can look that up. That's in, not Barron's, but, Crane's Business did a piece on that in 2016, and it was something that people wrote about in the 2000s too. It just fell away and nobody called him on it. And Trump's lied 1,000 times since about 9/11, up until the point that he said he was there pulling rubble off the pile. You know, like, that's insane. That's such false valor. And that's not even mentioning what Rudy Giuliani did, you know, the most despicable actor in 9/11, you know, the guy who just bobbled the whole thing for his whole ego and then grifted off it for the next 20 years, you know, and Bernie Kerik went to prison for defrauding 9/11 charities, essentially. And, you know, they gave an apartment near Ground Zero for like first responders to take a rest in. Kerik used it to have sexual relations, right, with his mistresses and stuff. After the attacks, he was up there getting laid when guys were getting cancer down on the pit, you know, pulling bodies out of there for the next year, including my friend who was NYPD, you know, who now has cancer from it. So these guys couldn't have been bigger scumbags. And it's no accident that they're involved in this with Trump, that Trump brought those guys in when he wanted the January 6th coup to come about. And Bernie Kerik is one of the guys who got the subpoena the other day of the 40 people, you know, on the, you know, Save America pack. So, you know, Bernie's an ex-con, looks like he might be a current con again too. That's good news, but I'm just trying to paint a picture how all this stuff gets related, right? How all this stuff gets intertwined and you have the same names showing up over and over. The difference between then and now, I said before, there was a certain decency to some of these guys. You know, you could hate George W. Bush. I hated his policy. Probably not the worst human being, right? He just doesn't seem like that bad a guy. You know, H.W. Bush had class and character in his later career. I'm not talking about these men's politics. I'm saying they're nothing like a Donald Trump, who's just debased and awful in a way that no one has ever seen. You know, my theory is he's the worst human being that the United States has ever produced. I think that's how history will view him ultimately, when you find out about all the stuff he's done, you know? And I'll tell you some more stuff down the road, probably. Stuff I haven't even talked about before, because it's so gross. It's like, you don't even want to hear it, you know? And that's part of the weapon that Trump uses. You know, people get outrage fatigue. They can't take it anymore. It's so bad. You know, it's so disgusting what a filthy human being he is that you almost can't bear it, you know, and we're still stuck with him. We're still having to talk about him when the world is on fire from climate change, right? And that's not a coincidence, right? Because the companies that are making money off of fossil fuels do not want you paying attention to that. They don't want a slow news week where people start doing deep dives into the glaciers melting and what's going to happen when these sea levels rise. right? They don't want people paying attention to that. It's easier to talk about the latest crazy, horrible thing that Trump did, right? The latest investigation. How many investigations have there been, right? And you lose sight of them. I was just talking about the inauguration grift. That was when he came into office, right? And it comes and goes. You know, another thing he did when he came into office is when you're elected president, I just told this to my friend Pete Dominic, who has a cool podcast I just did. But, you know, when you're president of the United States, there's an office in the White House called the military office, like military affairs or something. And those are the guys who work for DOD who carry the nuclear football, right? They have to make sure that, you know, one of their officers is always near the president with the suitcase that has the codes in it. You know, that you famously, it's like handcuffed to his wrist kind of thing, you know, the highest level of sort of like global security. Cause that's, you know, if you have to launch a nuclear warhead, that's the suitcase that has the, you know, however it works, you know, that you punch in these numbers or whatever. Right. So it's probably the most sensitive thing you could think about that comes along with being president, right? Like an honor and a daunting kind of responsibility, right? So when Trump becomes president, the DOD, you know, in this military office at the White House has to figure out like how they can have access to Trump, you know, how they can be near him at all times. As I said, if they need to run in at 3 a.m, they have to be there. So they figure out they have to rent an apartment in Trump Tower in case he ever goes to Trump Tower, right? So at that point, in 2020, even though Trump Tower is a gaudy, shitty place that nobody would ever really want to live in who had any sort of class, you know, Michael Jackson lived there at one point, but, you know, it's full of like poker dens and, you know, Russian mobsters and oligarchs, because he would just sell apartments for cash, right, through these cutouts and stuff, you know, through like, you know, LLCs and stuff, just the scummiest level of real estate brokering you could do. I have some friends that were, you know, involved in that, and it was no secret in New York, you know, so these anonymous people would pay cash for apartments, you know, like his drug dealer buddy I just talked about. When he got out of prison, he got a $2.5 million all cash apartment at Trump Tower after serving, you know, 13 months up in Danbury or whatever. So Trump has this shitty tower, right? But at market rate, it's 50 or 60 grand a month for a 3,500 square foot apartment. If it's furnished, maybe 60 grand a month, which is insane, right? But normal market rate for New York City. So the DOD has to rent one of these apartments. And what does Trump do? He raises the rate more than double to $130,000 a month. And the DOD rents this apartment, right? They sign an 18-month lease and put $2.5 million in Trump's pocket to have a place to keep the nuclear football. Trump never goes there. You know, he goes to New York City once to see Chuck Zito at the Garden and score some meth at a UFC fight. And that's it, you know? So he ripped off our country. He grifted them. And my point in this is that was his first thought, you know, when given the awesome responsibility of being president of the United States and knowing you were going to be the one guy, you know, if that moment, God forbid, ever arose, that would have to, you know, liquefy the planet, you know, in response to some kind of attack, you know, that you were going to have access to the nuclear football. All Trump could think about is how he could use it to put money in his pocket. And he did. And he got away with it. And he did the same thing to the Secret Service, right? Every time they'd go to Mar-a-Lago, he'd rip them off. You know, at one point, they went down early in his presidency to Mar-a-Lago and they didn't have any rooms, right? And they went to the front desk and said, you know, we need a room near the president. He's, you know, we got to protect him. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have anything near him. There's something across the street though. Would you like to be across the street? And it was a big deal for them. You know, they were screwed in that moment, right? So the next time they started booking rooms in advance, just in case he went there so they could protect him. It was a grift. Trump knew about it. He knew what to tell those people at the front desk. That's all they saw was, how do we grift? You know, Ivanka was doing it at the inauguration, raising rates to thousands of dollars a night for Trump hotel rooms, you know, when market rate would be $600. There's no grift too small or too petty for that family. They would steal craft service items at the end of a taping day on Celebrity Apprentice. I mean, they're as low class, griftiest, if it's not tied down, you know, we're going to steal it kind of people as you've ever met, right? And I point those things out because that's how they reacted, you know, to the nuclear football. Think of that. Like, not like, wow, that's an awesome responsibility. It's just like, how can I rip off the government? You know, the same government that he never paid taxes on, that his father never paid taxes on. So you're talking about people who've only taken from this country and have weakened it in a way that is literally mind-boggling. Nobody else would have ever gotten away with this. You have put people to death for far less, you know, with capital punishment and stuff. He makes the Rosenbergs look like chump change, and it's ongoing. There's an article today that NARA, you know, the archives don't even know if we've gotten all the information back that he stole post, you know, subpoena, post the FBI going in there. They still don't think they have everything back, which means it's floating around, you know. And we know that they sold secrets, you know, and you can pretty much narrow it down which country, you know, that Saudi Arabia and UAE would be most interested in knowing their nuclear capabilities, which is what we learned. You know, some of the information Trump stole had to do with another nation's defense capabilities, right? And there's only 7 or 8 nations that have nuclear, you know, capabilities. So you can do the math. You know, they weren't thinking about India or Pakistan, you know, or North Korea or England, right? They were thinking about the same country, you know, that Jared Kushner, who grew up with Netanyahu sleeping in his bedroom, had been doing all this business with, you know. And this week is the second anniversary of the Abraham Accords, you know, which was a business venture between Kushner and Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, you know, and parts of Israel to open up trade. And that's conveniently where he was on January 6th, you know, and then smugly comes back, you know, to the country and takes a shower in the middle of the riots, you know. And it's also, this is gossipy, but it's also worth noting Ivanka disappeared from Twitter after, you know, January 6th. And didn't tweet again until Jared's book came out a couple weeks ago, and then had over a dozen tweets like, go buy his book, you know, hey, yay, it's number one. And then she stopped tweeting. She didn't tweet once about the Queen of England passing away. And when Trump went for his big state visit in England, Jared and Ivanka tried to insert themselves into their first meeting. And it was a big sort of kerfuffle, right, with the royals, because they weren't invited. It wasn't appropriate. And it ended up, there wasn't room on the helicopter. So that's how they got Jared and Ivanka out of the situation. But Ivanka was clearly trying to get her picture with the Queen, as was Jared, right? And trying to insert themselves on the world stage because they're hungry. They're thirsty for that. And we know all the other examples of them doing that. But it's interesting, they didn't get away with it. And there was no statement from Ivanka like, we're so sorry that the Queen of England has passed. What a remarkable woman. We got to, you know, because they still got to go there and be there for the days of pageantry or whatever. But that spitefulness, that pettiness, that's just a little psychological kind of tell. You know, the other thing that was interesting about that trip, you know, and God bless the Queen for not allowing it to happen, is that Trump, when he was originally planning it, thought he tried to plan his visit like with them and said, okay, I want to be taken through London in a horse-drawn carriage, because he was trying to impress his mom. His mom's dead, obviously, but like she, you know, she was from Wales or something. And like, you know, they're all into that kind of pomp and circumstance. So, you know, Trump sort of viewed it as his coronation and thought, you know, the whole nation was going to roll out the red carpet, you know, and they were going to take him touring through London in a horse-drawn carriage. And we all saw what they actually did. You know, he was stupidly standing there and stood in front of the Queen and didn't get on the right side of her and just looked like a big oaf in a too small tuxedo, right? But he thought he was going to have this big, you know, the greatest thing to ever happen to London was the Trumps coming to visit. And they knocked it down. They clearly had disdain for him. And the other interesting thing about that visit is Trump had breakfast with Prince Andrew, his old running buddy from Epstein's townhouse and island and Mar-a-Lago and all this shit, right? Trump had a private breakfast with Prince Andrew during that visit that wasn't on the schedule. And he was asked about it a few days later. And he goes, I don't know Prince Andrew. I've never met him. Dude, you just had breakfast with him. And there's pictures of you and Epstein and, you know, whatever Trump's wife's name is, Melania, hanging out, right? Like in the past. So Trump clearly had a private meeting with Prince Andrew to talk about Epstein, and they took care of the problem and blah, blah, blah. You know, Andrew's obviously a pedophile. Trump's a pedophile, sexual predator. You know, Epstein was in business of selling young women to these powerful men, you know, including probably Bill Clinton, you know, who went down to his island. And I've worked with Clinton. I like the Clintons. I'm not bringing them into it. I'm just trying to be honest about how many people were wrapped up in the whole Epstein thing, you know, from royalty to, you know, American presidents, which is why Epstein went away, right? And none of that came out. Even Ghislaine, you know, whose dad was, you know, Robert Maxwell, who was like sort of another, you know, international arms dealer scumbag guy who's been tied up with all these same characters forever. You know, there's a reason all this stuff went away, right? So I don't know what the point is really of all that. It's just interesting. You know, when I see all this on TV, like, you don't hear about that a lot, and we're all supposed to be polite. And obviously the royal family is stripped Andrew of his official duties, but, you know, scumbag, right? You know, clear, you know. And I don't think Prince Charles, King Charles or whatever, is gonna probably last too long. The video clips I've seen are pretty embarrassing in the last couple of days of him just, you know, being a total like douchebag to the people around him. You know, that kind of goes with that sort of wealth. Prince Harry, on the other hand, I've met, and he's an incredible young man. He's we did a thing, I probably told this story before. We did a polo match on Governor's Island a few years ago, more, you know, probably 10 years ago or something. And Madonna was playing, and not even playing. Madonna was just a guest, and she insisted on having a car in the island, you know, to take her from when she got off the ferry, because you take a ferry from Manhattan. And it was just real logistical pain in the ass. And, you know, we got her there, and she wouldn't take her seat until she sat under this parasol that was like $700 that we had to go out and purchase for her and all this stuff. And Prince Harry was like, had his own gig down, you know. And at the end of the thing, he played too. He played polo. At the end of the thing, there'd been a woman who was a 9/11 survivor, I believe, this wonderful singer, a Black woman who's just a great singer and part of the, you know, New York Fire Department. And she sang like the anthem or something that day. And at the end of the match, Harry didn't care about Madonna. He didn't care about the VIPs. He said, where's that woman? I want to thank her. I want to thank her. Her singing meant something to me. And he sought her out and took a picture with her. And it was genuine. It wasn't something for the cameras. It was something that showed his character, you know? And you can see in the way that Meghan Markle is being treated right now, you can almost see the distillation of centuries of racism getting focused in on one woman, you know, and it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And I'll leave it at that. You know, I've been watching a Bob Marley documentary too. You know, Bob Marley, people got tear gassed at his funeral, and everyone knows the history of Jamaica and England. But, I'm telling you, I'm not going to get into it because I know it's sensitive, and I'm part English. You know, I have an English grandmother and passed away, step-grandmother, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time in England, and, you know, I love a lot of people in Britain. I'm not like dissing on you. And I'll tell you that story I promised at the beginning now, but I worked for a certain rock band that I've mentioned before. And one of those members is actually an OBE, you know, which is a thing the Queen gives you or gave you or something. He could care less. You know, he's not somebody who gives into that stuff. But another guy in that band was an American guy who was very impressed with that and called himself a royalist, you know, which or a monarchist or some ridiculous thing that I told to this other member, and he laughed like crazy. But we were going to this dinner. I basically had to go along to this dinner at like a Lord's house or something, you know. And I didn't want to go. You know, we'd go to London every year and we'd play the Royal Albert Hall and stuff. And got to stay in this nice hotel next to Kensington Palace. And I love London. I'd live there in a heartbeat. You know, it's probably my favorite city. And so I'm psyched to have the night off in London. And I get a call from the band's manager and they're like, you got to go along with this dinner. And I'm like, let him go with who invited him. There's already somebody going. And they're like, no, you have to go, you know, just in case something happens, we want you there. And like, so I had to insert myself in this situation that I wasn't invited to, right? And it was bad form for me to show up and I had to show up and they made me sit upstairs while they all ate dinner. I sort of sat upstairs with the help, you know, and there was a guitar there and I wrote a cool song called London Skies while I was waiting, you know, for the dinner to be over. And at the end of the dinner, you know, it was okay for me to go down to the table when they were having dessert or something and join them. And this guy, you know, pulls out a guitar, the guy I'm with, right? The rock star who I love. It's not a diss on him. And he starts singing a song, like singing for his supper, essentially. And it was hilarious because like it was an electric guitar that the guy who owned the house had and like a little practice amp. And we plug him in and he's playing and he's like, hey, more reverb, you know, more delay. Like he's barking orders at me like we're already at Royal Albert Hall and he's got his full concert rig. You know, I'm like, dude, this is a practice amp and we're sitting at a kitchen table. That's as good as it's going to sound, you know. But he plays this song and it's actually really sweet and a pretty intimate performance, right? Pretty cool thing. And at the end of it, there's this lady who's sitting at the table, very beautiful, cool person, you know, who's sitting there who I'd never met before. And you can see she's sort of jazzed about the music and this guy's really jazzed to be performing for her. And, you know, she's like, if you drew a sketch of what you thought like a princess would be and look like, it's this woman. And so he finishes playing and he's like, hey, would you like to come to our concert? We're playing Royal Albert Hall tomorrow night. She goes, yes, that would be lovely. You know? And so rock star guy turns to me and he goes, make sure that happens, Noel, you know, get her name on the list. So I pull out my phone and I'm like, you know, as you do, you take down names and you put them on the guest list, you know? So I'm like, can I have your name? And she goes, Ella. And I'm like, what's your last name? And she goes, Windsor. And I don't need any tickets. I have a box. See, she was part of the royal family, right? And the royal family can walk into Royal Albert Hall anytime they want. It's pretty funny to me anyway. Like how many moments in life is someone's like, what's your last name? Windsor, you know? Oh, I heard of that. Sweet girl, Ella Windsor. And we got to hang out a lot of other times after that. And I think she got married last year and, you know, offering my thoughts and prayers to her and the rest of the royals. But I just wanted to share that story with you. So anyway, thanks for listening. I know it's been a bit of a break. I'm sorry to come at you with all the tense Trump talk. I don't know what else to do when it bottles up like that, you know, and thanks for indulging me with the guitar playing in the beginning. I broke out a very special PRS I have. I've been on a Dwayne Allman kick recently, man. Dwayne Allman had accomplished so much and he died, you know, almost about 50 years ago, 1971. So 50 years ago, you know, October coming up on the anniversary. He was only 24 years old. And you think about the music that guy made, you know, he'd only been playing guitar for 10 years, slide for 3. And it's just staggering. I saw an excellent documentary on him on Amazon the other day. And so I've been trying to up my slide game. Good luck with that, right? It's like picking up a saxophone and trying to sound like Coltrane, which I do sometimes. Just to be warned, I do have a nice saxophone out in the studio. I'll bust it out sometime. And, you know, I'll shut up now. I'll let you guys go. I was reminded there was a great little clip of, I'll get into it another time, but Wynton Marsalis was on the Bill Maher show the other night and Judd Apatow shared a clip and it reminded me of the Wynton Marsalis that I got to work with when I did something at Jazz at Lincoln Center, which is a very touching, enriching experience. And he's been one of my, he and Ellis Marsalis, his father, have sort of been my teachers from afar in life. I've just been such a fan and I've known Branford, you know, I've met him a few times and I know Wynton a little bit. And in my studio, there's a picture of me and Ellis and a bunch of other people. So that family is a national treasure and I have a cool experience to share with you next time. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves. Looks like we're getting an Indian summer. It's pretty hot. I think it's going to be pretty hot next week. And try to cut down on the fossil fuels, man. Every little bit helps. If you don't need to turn it on, turn it off. Okay. Till next time. I love you guys. I know this has been a dose, right? But it's going to work out. Love always wins, as I always say. In the end, it's all going to be as it should be, right? All is well. Ultimately, just know that at any given moment, all is well. Don't forget to breathe. Don't forget an opportunity to be kind and loving. And that can be in any little way. You see a bug, don't step on it. Get it out of harm's way. You know, help life be life. Celebrate it, because there's an energy there. And when you tap into it, it's golden. It's not just golden, it's your purpose. You know, go to sleep and listen to the raindrops, listen to the crickets, listen to this time of year. You know, this is harvest time. It was the harvest moon over the weekend. That's a beautiful time of year. It's like nature's ripening. It's like a cornucopia of everything, you know, coming alive right before it goes to sleep for the winter. And even in the winter, that's when things grow, right? So even when those leaves fall off the trees are growing, and the trees talk to each other, right? Through their roots and stuff. It's all related, man. Try to figure out what the birds are saying when you hear them sing. But thanks for listening, guys. I love you. Until next time, this has been Noel Castler Podcast, episode 79. I'll do a bonus podcast for you to make up for the one I missed last week. I'll bring a friend on. And I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. So peace. And until next time, take it easy. Bye.